Okay, so welcome to part two of Pirkei Avos. And like we noted last time, there's a old custom to study Pirkei Avos on Shabbos afternoon, and hopefully we'll find time to do that as well. But hopefully these shiurim will be able to help us have more of an insight into the Mishnayos that we learn on Shabbos afternoon, and it still give us that summer experience of a Pirkei Avos shiurim. And in Pirkei Avos, we could probably spend a couple weeks on, one or two of the Mishnayot, and there are really so many. But I thought each time you can explore, not necessarily, in order one by one, but explore a particular Mishnah that we can gain a lot from. So tonight I'd like to explore a Mishnah in the second chapter, and it's a Mishnah that on the surface seems to discuss somewhat unrelated thoughts. But before we begin, I'll put the source sheet in the chat, and I'll share it on the screen. I want to see if we can find a theme in this Mishnah. What's the Mishnah telling us? So the Mishnah says, Hillel Omer, this refers to Hillel the elder, who lived just around the beginning of the Common Era, the first century BCE, up until, I think, year 10 of the Common Era. And he was the father of Beit Hillel. When the Talmud first, the Mishnah refers to Beit Hillel, so is the Academy of Hillel. But he is the Hillel the elder. And he said, Al tifrosh atzmecha min hatzibor. Don't separate yourself from the community or from the congregation. Ve'al tamin ba'atzmecha ad yom moscha. Don't believe in yourself or trust in yourself until the day of your death. And don't judge your friend until you've reached his place. Don't say something that's impossible to understand. We can talk a little more about what that means, but with the intent that eventually will be understood. And finally, the Al Tomar, and don't say, look at Sheapone Eshne, that when I have free time, I'll learn Shemelosipane, because maybe you won't have the time available. So, what are some themes we see in this Mishnah? Is there a theme that ties them all together? Or ties some of them together?
Community.
Community. So we see very clearly community is mentioned explicitly in the first teaching. What about the rest of the teachings?
To do things now, not put them off.
To seize the moment, right? And why does it suggest that you shouldn't put them off?
You may never have the time.
You may never have time. So it definitely speaks to, and I think we can see this also in the Altadin, but I could say, don't believe in yourself. Don't be sure of yourself until the day of your death. Things can always change. And you have that also in, especially in the last saying, the Altomar, that when I have available time, I'll learn because Shema lo tipane. Maybe we won't have free time. So that's also seems to be a theme that do things now because of the unpredictability of the future. Now, do you see any connection between the Stephen mentioned the community, so between the community part and the subsequent parts of the Mishnah?
The subsequent part is more one-on-one.
Meaning speaking to a person, meaning there you're telling a person you should do this because maybe you want the opportunity to do it later. where he's saying the first part is speaking to the community.
Well, the first one speaks about the community because the word community is in the
right. That speaks very directly to community. Right. Yeah. And I see that point. It seems like the subsequent statements speak to the person. It's telling you, don't believe in yourself until the day of your death. Don't judge your friend until you reach this place. So right. So that seems to be a difference between the first statement and the subsequent statements. Debbie said that we're all human and share innate qualities. So that could be that the congregation of the community is composed of many individuals, and those individuals share innate qualities. So there's it goes from speaking more broadly to people individually. So that's definitely something that I think emerges.
It also speaks to the fact that, not only just the community, but also that there's always going to be another person you have to be accountable for or to account for as well. So that there's always a relation. You have to have these relationships so that you can ensure that your fellow partner, your people in the best midrash, whatever it is, you are accountable for their well-being.
Right. So I mean that all the statements that are referring to the individual are really preparing you and giving you the tools to act as to facilitate a community.
I think Stephen used the right word, relationships. I think it's about relationships with ourselves and with others.
Right. That's also an astute point, that it's how we relate to the community, how we relate to ourselves in different respects.
There's something else here too, I think. The Altifrosh Min HaTzibur can give you a question as to what happens if the Tzibur is not correct.
Is it my connection or is Charlie frozen? Can anyone hear me?
The community in the sense that we have to join with the group. We don't have to agree with the group all the time. We don't have to agree. But being part of a community is an important element of being Jewish.
Right. I was knocked off for a second. But I think what Charlie was saying is, what do you do if the community isn't good, isn't going to be a good influence, right? That's where he left off. So we're going to see, this gets a little, it's a balance, because we also have a Mishnah that says we should stay away from a bad neighbor, stay away from those who will influence us negatively. So we'll have to see where do we draw the line between dealing with the different people in the community. And there's an acronym that's the word Tzibur. It's been pointed out because it's the acronym of Tzaddikim, Beinonim, and Rishayim. You have the pious people, the average people, and the wicked people. That's a Tzibur, a congregation, a community has all those types of people. And somehow we need to be part of that. At the same time, you mentioned sometimes there's a limit. Sometimes there are people and environments that can bring a person down. I saw an explanation that I thought was very astute from Irving Bunim, who has a commentary in Pirkei Avos. He was a lay leader in the community in the mid-20th century, and he can really connect. He notes that the first statement seems to be not so connected to the subsequent statements, right? The subsequent statements, are all centered around not being able to know the future, the unpredictability of life. But what does the first one necessarily have to do with the other ones? So he says that maybe what Hillel is doing is he's pointing out different objections that someone may have about being more active in the community. Maybe a person will say, well, maybe my religiosity, maybe my knowledge is greater than those in the community. So, you know, I'll do my own thing. And, you know, I'll work on myself. I'll do my own thing. You know, I don't need to get involved with, you know, people who are good people, but let's say less learned or less religious. And he said, that's why it says, don't believe, don't trust in yourself so much until the day of your death. Don't think that you on your own are going to be able to maintain that level that you're afraid of in some way compromising on. You don't know what's going to happen. Basically, you need the community. Don't let that discourage you from being more of an active part of the community. It says you may be a great person at the moment, but you don't know what could hold for the future. The next part, don't judge your friend until you reach his place. Also part of being a community. Learn to accept different types of people. Understand that people have different backgrounds, different challenges, and you should wait. We should hold judgment until we have an understanding of their circumstances. Also part of being part of the community. And Altomar Davarshi Efshar Lishmo Shasofer Lishama. Don't say something that's not understood with the hope that it will eventually be understood. So you could say either that's confidentiality is one explanation, or that the person is a part of the community, has to communicate in a way that won't be misinterpreted. And also don't say that when I have time available, then I'll learn. No, you have to be a part of, that could also be why someone would not want to be part of the community. That, I don't know, maybe my community involvement will take me away from learning, and I'll do it according to this system, you know, where I'll have free time. No, we don't necessarily know. So he says that a theme that we can find is that it really, the theme is really under the heading of the community. And the following statements are addressing one, ways of being a part of the community, and two, things that factors that may dissuade someone from being more active in a community. Let's take a look at the different statements in the Mishnah. So the first part, Al tifrosh min hatzibur, don't separate yourself from the community. So this actually has applications in many different areas. And firstly, it has halachic applications. That in certain halachic matters, there's a importance of being part of a community, and maybe even the halakhic practice is determined by what the community does. So there are a couple of approaches that are offered. One is the Tiferes Yisrael, Rishon Lipshitz, and he says that this is, a lot of these are addressed to community leaders, basically addressed to the rabbi who comes into a community. So what does it say? Al tifrosh min hatzibor. He says, shelo yivrosh mimin hagei hatzibor. Don't separate from the communal norms. Don't go into a community. The community has a certain way of doing things, certain customs. Don't at least outwardly do things that are different than the community. And this is something that they encounter. Let's say we go to a shul that has a different nusach, a different custom in davening. So we daven to ourselves, we daven our own nusach, but when saying things out loud, so we try to, or we conform to the nusach, the customs of the place where we're davening. You know, now in North America, there's a little more of a hodgepodge of customs. People are from different backgrounds, but it used to be especially that a certain town was under one leadership, and they would have more defined customs. And when a person goes into a community, they shouldn't deviate from the communal norms. And the second part is, again, speaking with the rabbi or to a community leader, that there's a responsibility to speak to and be involved in the needs and goals of the community. And he's speaking to, you know, the rabbi. When the rabbi comes in, he wants to He wants to schedule some shiurim. All his balal or organizing the davening. All his highest beizek mitzvah ot sarkei tzibur or when giving advice for a mitzvah or the needs of the community. Lo yomar alchitu heim shiurtzu v'ani mizratze bekacho bekach. Don't say that, you know, they'll do what I want and I'll do this and that. Meaning, you know, I'll decide what I want to teach, what I want to speak about. You know, and they'll do what they do. I'll focus on what I want to focus on. And it's saying that that's not what I want you to do. Rak tzarek liyatz et tovas hatzibor zeh b'chol davar levodas Hashem. Rather, you have to get to know the community and guide them in the way that will be most conducive to their service of God. You don't just go in and do your own thing. And I know from person who, you know, gives shiurim on a regular basis. Sometimes you're drawn to something that you're interested in. I think it's always good when someone gives a shiur on a topic they're interested in. Otherwise, if you're not interested in, chances are you're not going to deliver it in a way that other people are. But you have to consider what do the people who I'm learning with, who I'm guiding, what would be beneficial for them to hear? What were they interested in hearing? And, you know, that's something that the Tiferes Yisrael is saying, that we should avoid not doing that. We should avoid just, you know, going in and not necessarily addressing the needs of the community. The community does their own thing. They're the way they are. I'll do my thing. He's saying, no, you have to be involved in the community and even tailor your approach to what would be most beneficial to the community. There's another aspect to this in the realm of halacha. And that's a concept that you find in certain places. And sometimes when there's a doubt about what the law is or what the custom is, we say, and this is mentioned in source number 4, Pochazi Maida Amadavar, Mayamadavar. Go and see what the people are doing. You can't say that in all cases if everyone's eating shrimp, so you can't doesn't make shrimp allowed. But we'll see there are some examples that you're not sure, you know, what the ruling is according to which opinion we go by. So sometimes we resolve it. There's no clear ruling. Sometimes we'll resolve it by pointing. We'll see what the people do. And sometimes what the people will do, sometimes what the community of Jews does actually has an impact on fixing the legal ruling. And there's an example of this, Gemara in Pesachim, and we brought it because the Mishnah was authored by Hillel. So there's another case where Hillel gives weight to community practice. Gemara in Pesachim mentions the law that a korban Pesach can be shechted, can be slaughtered on Shabbos. In fact, if we merited to have the korban Pesach this past year, so that's what would have happened. Korban Pesach is shechted on Erev Pesach. But there's a question about, well, what about the preparations for the korban Pesach? Can you carry a knife to where you're going to be shechting the korban Pesach, or do you have to leave it there before? Similar discussion regarding bris milah. The opinion we go by is that you can't in that case. But what about with the korban Pesach? So they said it to Hillel. So Rebbe shachach v'lo hevi sakan me'erev Pesach mahu. If you forgot your knife to bring on Friday before Shabbos, so what? What's the law? Can you then bring your knife on Shabbos? And lahen halakha azu shamati v'shachachti. You know, it's a good question. I forgot it. I learned this once, but I forgot it. So what does he say? El harak lahen Yisrael. Go, you know, leave it to the Jewish people. Im ein neviim hein v'nei neviim hein. That if they're not prophets, they're children of prophets, meaning I'm not sure what the ruling is, but we assume that the Jewish people are acting correctly. Go see what they're doing. They have, you know, insight into what the law is, and he was willing to even decide a matter in the laws of Shabbos, which are very serious, giving weight to what the community is doing. And another example of this, where it mentions that concept of pokazi mayama davar, is with regard to the bracha that you say after water. So what bracha do you say? So they weren't sure. There were different opinions. So which opinion do we go like? So again, Go see what the people are doing. We assume that common practice, you know, if it's sourced in an opinion, so we do give way to common practice. So Debbie says, would it be possible to release today? You know, some members of the community are choosing not to vaccinate. Would that be deviating from community norms? So I can't say on a whole, we discussed vaccination in the previous year. Maybe there are mitigating factors, but it would seem that that vaccination is an imperative based on this idea that you're at least not mitigating factors. It would seem that there was a lack of consideration about what is in the community's interest. If you say, okay, it's my thing, you know, I'm scared of needles or something, you know, that may not be taking into account what the community needs. So possibly. And so there's that aspect. There's the aspect when it comes to halakha, that one, following the local custom, but also that halakhic practice can be determined based on what people do. And there's another aspect of identification with and solidarity with the community. And this can be seen in an account with Elisha the prophet and the Shunammite woman. So they asked her, what can they do on her behalf? So she responded, they said, should we speak to the king? Should we speak to an officer? And it says, V'tomer b'toch ami anochi yoshavis, that I'm in the midst of the people I dwell, meaning don't just go and advocate on my behalf. My concerns are the concerns of the community. And also demonstrating this principle that we don't live in a vacuum, and we should identify with the community's concerns when we should act on the community's behalf. And this comes especially important when some of the Jewish people are in distress. Gemara in Titus, it's verse number 6, says, "Bizman Yisrael shruin b'tzar uferach echad mehen," that at a time when the Jewish people is immersed in distress, and one of them separates from the community, "Voin shemalachay asharez shemalaven lola adam," there are two ministering angels who accompany a person, "umanichin lo yedehin al rosho," and place their hands on his head, "va'omrim," and they say, "plonizeh sheperish minat tzibor al yireh." That so-and-so who separated himself from the community will not see the consolation of the community. And this is illustrated, this mindset is illustrated in the following, in the beginning of the second page, in the second paragraph, says another brisa says, Tanya Ida, Bizman Shatzibor Shori Bitsar, that a time when the community is immersed in suffering, Ali Omar, Eilat Levesi, Ve'okla Ve'eshte, Ve'shalom Alayach Nafshi. Don't say that someone who's lucky enough, and we have in different crises, whether financial or health-wise, some people tend to fare better than others. So a person who is not impacted by a certain trouble that's affecting many other people in the community. So the Bryce is telling us, don't say, okay, you know, I'll go to my house, I'll eat and drink, and you know, I'll be at peace.
Rabbi. Would you say Malkat Esther was a situation where she did not get to see the consolation of her community because she had to stay in the Kashrei Rosh's house for the rest of her life?
So she saw the fact that the decree was not rescinded, but that the Jews had the opportunity to overcome their oppressors. But you're right. I think it's in that case, the Nechama, the relief of the community may be different for different people. So I think on that particular matter that she was advocating for, she was also saved and she was able to benefit from that success. But unfortunately, in other areas, she was still separated from the community through no fault of her own. But maybe that's a good point, that it's a consequence of just separation from the community, that you don't get to necessarily join in the benefits that the community offers. chat. You have to empathize and take actions, or one or the other. So I think certainly, if anything, taking actions is more intuitive. We know about tzedakah, you know, that you have to support someone, but this is also speaking about an attitude, a mindset, that we're not supposed to mentally detach ourselves from the needs of the community. You know, by going home, by someone, let's say there's an example that is mentioned in Yeshayahu is of a famine. So let's say someone, there's a famine and there's nothing you can do about it. So as far as it goes home, they're able to eat, a nice meal. The thing that's in addition to maybe that the fact that you could contribute to the rest of the people, you shouldn't just enjoy yourself while other people are experiencing hardship. And this is reflected in Yeshayahu, who says, Hine sasar v'simcha harav bachar v'shachlet son, so behold joy and gladness, laying oxen and killing sheep, achol basar v'shachlet yayin, eating meat and drinking wine, v'shachlet kim bachar namus. You shouldn't have the approach of, you know, for eat and drink, you know, for tomorrow we'll die. And because if someone says that, Hashem responds, v'nigla v'az, Mosnei Hashem Tzvakos, and Hashem, Master of Legions, revealed himself in my ear, saying, Imi kubar avon hazeh, lachem al tmusun, that truly this iniquity shall not be expiated by you until you die. It's considered very, this mindset is considered very objectionable, that just to detach yourself from the community suffering. Rather, what should someone do? In the second paragraph, Ella itzar adam min imatzi, but rather a person should be distressed together with the community. We find by Moshe, in the case in the war against Amalek, the Torah says, Vide Moshe kvedim, that the hands of Moshe were heavy. And he took a stone and put it under him, and he sat upon it. So that his hands were heavy, they had to weigh it down. But the Gemara asks, but didn't Moshe have a pillow or a cushion to sit on? Right, he wasn't actively involved in the fighting. Rather, what Moshe said, because the Jewish people are immersed in suffering, I'll also deprive myself of a certain level of comfort. Maybe not even because I'm doing anything active. I just can't detach myself from feeling the pain of the community or feeling the struggles and challenges of the community. One who is distressed together with the congregation will merit seeing the consolation of the community. And there are accounts of people who are cognizant of this. I've read once that, so there are examples, but Rebbetzin Rishel Cutler was the wife of Rabbi Schneer Cutler, was the second Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood Yeshiva. And I think at a certain point, she was able to get to America from Europe earlier on. But while all of the struggles were happening in Europe, so apparently for those years during the war, she didn't put sugar in her tea or in her coffee. And you could say, what's the what's the big deal? But the point is, she'd wanted to at least do something to remain cognizant of the fact that there are people who are struggling, and to refrain from indulging and enjoying herself in a way that you'll lose sight of that. So, there are different ways and small ways like that, that it's telling us that, there are certain things that we don't necessarily have the power to change, and there's not much we could do about it, but at least just to, do something to remind ourselves that there are brethren among us who are suffering, and to share at least emotionally in their struggles. So that's this aspect of al tifrosh min hatzibur, that don't separate oneself from the community don't emotionally detach from the community, share in the community's sufferings. Obviously, there's anything one can do in the to help them to do that, but at least just emotionally share in their pain, be cognizant of it, and then the flip side, share in their simchas as well. Sometimes that can be harder. You know, someone's having a simcha, maybe you're jealous, or maybe they're having celebrating something that you haven't been able to celebrate. But you know, to share in their simcha, be happy when there are other Jews who are celebrating. That's also a way of identifying with the community of the Jewish people. Another aspect of it is that it enhances our performance of mitzvahs. Our mitzvahs are enhanced when they're done with the community. And it's based on the concept of Rav Am Hadras Melech, that with the multitudes, the king's glory will be more beautified. And this is a concept that we have with certain mitzvahs. In particular, it's referenced with Megillas Esther. Unfortunately, this year we had to gather in small groups, but there really is an emphasis that if one can, all things being equal, to gather in a big minyan for the reading of the Megillah, or maybe even in general. I'm not saying right now, but there's a value in that you're going to pick a shul to go to. Sometimes there are other factors, but there is an idea of davening with the largest minyan, hearing the Megillah with the largest gathering. Because there's an idea that the more people who are there, that glorifies the king more. And you can understand the analogy to a king. You know, that you can have, let's say a king comes to present themselves. So, okay, you can have small pods, right? Now small bubbles of people greeting the king. Okay, he goes to this block, a couple of people, this block, a couple of people. But if there's one large gathering coming out to greet him, so that really is more of, that really shows more honor to the king than even in small groups. There's an idea that if the community is all gathering together, it enhances your performance of mitzvahs. A mitzvah done with the community is of a higher quality than a mitzvah done alone. And this is why you shouldn't separate from them. The strength in numbers. Exactly. Strength in numbers, both, you know, generally, more people are involved in an endeavor, the more successful it is. And also the idea that you're showing more honor to God by all coming together and giving him more of a recognition. So that's part number one of Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur. Don't separate from the community. Don't separate from the community as far as their customs, realizing the power of the community to even establish halakhic practice. Join with the community emotionally and identify with their struggles, and also use the community as a positive reinforcement. If they're doing something good, let the community motivate you. The community can also provide accountability. And also when a mitzvah is done with the community, it can show more honor to God than even when done individually. And now the next part. Don't believe in yourself until the day you die. So this is a very important lesson. And then you see people, the Gemara mentions in several places, mentions this idea that don't think because you're coasting or because you're doing well that you don't have to be on guard. That even people after a long life of piety, they can still stumble. And they still stumble, and they can still regress as far as the character traits that they've developed. So the Rambam says in number 8, don't think, Amar the Adam, Afalpi Shatiya Lo Tachuna Chashuva, Benefesh, Zak Lo Yisalik, Yado, Likol Asiya Satob, Lohosiva Hatizav. Don't think that even though the person has a distinctive character trait and solely strengthened it, so he shouldn't remove his hand from redoubling his doing good things and adding to the reinforcement. Well, you don't be so overconfident and say, Zosa Malakfar also, Yadi, don't say that this virtue has already reached my hand. I've already conquered this trait. I've already accomplished this character trait. The F sharp, these are the F sharp. Shetazer hu amru ad yomoskva. And it's possible that it'll fall away. And that's why it says, until the day you die. Don't think that, you know, let's say you think you conquered your anger, you think you've, you're beyond temptation in different areas. Don't be so confident. If you were on guard about this, let's say in your younger years, don't think that you have to stop now. And a Gemara Kiddushin, actually in the discussion of the laws of Yichud, of not being secluded with people of the opposite gender, so it tells a story that illustrates this point. It tells the story of Rechia Bar Ashi, who would always, when he would daven, he would always say, Harachaman Yatzilenu Miyetzer Hara, Hashem, save us from the evil inclination. So his wife heard this, and she said that apparently he was elderly, and they hadn't been intimate in several years. So apparently he didn't have a desire for that. So he's saying, what's he davening for? Why does he have to worry about you being tempted in this particular area? He's already, his interests have already been removed. So why does he say this prayer? So one day, when he was learning in his garden, she adorned herself and repeatedly walked past him. So he said, who are you? And she says, I'm Charuta, who is apparently a well-known prostitute, returning from my day at work. So he propositioned her, and she said to him, give me that pomegranate from the top of the tree as payment. So he paid her, and he went, and they had relations, meaning he courted a prostitute. And when he came home to his wife, he went inside, and she said to him, what happened? And she said, he told her, he felt, here he says, he was this pious person. And he said, he told her that he had stumbled in this area. And but the wife told him, don't worry, it was just me. Right? I thought that you no longer had an interest. So I wanted to test it. And it was just me. I was just dressed up as this prostitute. And you didn't actually transgress. But says that he was very distressed and he didn't pay any attention to her. He had such regret about what he did that he fell to his temptation. So she gave him all the sides. She tried to convince him that it was her. So he said, in any event, I intended to transgress, meaning I didn't. But what happened to me that I was willing to court a prostitute like this? And it said that he fasted every day until he died in his misery. It's very sad that here you think, oh, you know, I'm not a young person anymore. I don't have to worry about these types of temptations. You see, even someone at this point, at this age, and who, you know, was at this level of righteousness, needed to always be on guard. See, he was even davening for that. But there's no point in life where we can say that we can, that's what the Rambam was saying, there's no point in life that we could say, you know, now I can let down my guard, right? I've already done this. I don't have to worry about it anymore. That we can never say that we don't have to, you know, always strengthen ourselves to avoid negative things, whether in this area or in the area of religion, of belief. The Gemara in Brachos says that, it quotes this Mishnah in a conversation, that can someone who is already righteous, can he then become wicked? So these quotes are, our Mishnah says, don't believe in yourself until the day you die. What's an example of why this is so important? That Yochanan, the high priest, in the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, he was the high priest for 80 years, and then became a Sadducee, a heretic, basically a deviant sect of Judaism that denied the oral law. After all that time, you know, who knows what he was, if he was, you know, faking it for part of the time, or what kind of challenges he was dealing with. But you see, even someone like that, don't think that it's never time. You don't have to, you know, worry about being drawn to negative ideas. Even someone who is serving in the priesthood for all those years is still tempted to join a deviant sect. And Rabbeinu Yonah comments that this is both about behavior and faith. And that's why a person has to be very careful about what they expose themselves to. And he mentions the idea of learning from a teacher who's a proper example. That the Gemara in Chagiga says that your Rebbe, your teacher, should be like an angel. That you should learn Torah from someone who's not only wise, but whose behavior is fitting of emulation. And if it's not, that even if they have the knowledge, you really shouldn't learn Torah from such a person, because they'll give you knowledge, but they'll influence your thinking and they'll influence your behavior. But in the Gemara there asks, well, what about Rabbi Meir? Rabbi Meir learned from Elisha ben Avuye, Acher, the sage who then became a heretic. But Rabbi Meir, his student, would continue to learn from him. And they said, how could he do that? So Rabbi Meir responded that he was able to take the fruit and throw out the peel. He was able to separate the good from the bad and only take those things that were good. But in general, we assume that not all people are able to do that. And therefore, we should be very careful about what we expose ourselves to, whom we learn from, particularly in the area of Torah. And because negative ideas can really have a power to influence us, even at a point where we feel that we're strong in our beliefs. We still have to be very careful about them. And just illustrated in a pasuk from Iyov, and this also speaks to the ideas that are mentioned in the rest of the Mishnah, which we'll look at. It says in source number 12, Kismola nafnu velo neida, for we are yesterday and we know nothing, kitzel yamenu alei aretz. Because our days on earth are like a shadow. We don't know anything. We can't say that we know the future. So we always have to be on guard. A couple messages in the chat. The top of the world now and the bottom tomorrow. And so the question was why this has no Gemara. So there is a sort of midrash on Pirkei Avos, Avos de Rebbe Nassan, but which does have more extensive discussions. But right, there's no legal Gemara, because really this is not generally the Gemara deals with legal concepts. This really is all more ethical teaching. So this is never a Talmudic tractate discussion on this. But it's Avos de Rebbe Nassan is kind of like a midrash kind of commentary on it. So now the next part, don't judge your fellow until you've stood in his place. And a person shouldn't think that if I was in that situation, you know, I would do differently. You know, how could it be that someone else stumbles in this area or does such and such? If I were in the situation, if I were in that position, I would do differently. It's also like a warning to be careful of what positions we assume, right? We see that sometimes power corrupts. How do we know if we were in such a position, we would do differently? Now, just to be clear, that doesn't mean that this is suggesting, you know, moral relativism, that nothing's right, nothing's wrong. No, we can certainly judge actions as wrong. In fact, we have to. But when passing judgment, realize that we don't know and we can't determine a person's, let's say, level of accountability and be able to say that we would do differently. And I think one thing that comes out of this is there is not judging another person, because we don't have the ability to judge that person. Again, we can judge an action, but not a person. But when you judge another person, what are you essentially doing? You're essentially, whether you're saying explicitly or not, you're raising yourself up. You're saying, well, they're doing this, but I would be better. And it's telling us to realize the limitations of what we know about ourselves. Don't assume that we would be better. Don't raise ourselves up while pushing others down, but understand that people have different challenges and don't be so sure that we would do differently. And judge a person with a good eye, right? An eye in tov is something that's also part of this. Dan l'kaf skosh, judge people favorably. But until we stand in another person's place, don't think that we would necessarily do differently. Don't pass an absolute judgment on the person. And this is powerfully brought out by the following example in the Gemara about this discusses the wicked king Menashe. Menashe was a king in Eretz Yisrael, and he introduced, his father was Chizkiyahu, he's exceedingly righteous, and then when Menashe took power, he introduced idolatry and was in general a very wicked king. And the Mishnah says that he's one of three kings who doesn't have a share in the world to come. So so when discussing Menashe, Rav Ashi was speaking about Menashe, explaining these ideas of why Menashe was so terrible. And Rav Ashi says, okay, Shosha Malachim, and he concluded his lecture about the three kings. He said, Lamachar Niftach Bechavrin. Next, we'll continue with our friends, with our colleagues, the three kings. You're referring to them in a, you know, they were in a way that's beneath the protocol of a king. You know, our friends, our buddies. So Asa Menashe is Chazid La Bechelme. So that name Menashe came to Rav Ashi in a dream. Amar, he said, Chavrach Vechaved Rai Davuch Karislan. You refer to us as your colleagues and the buddies of your father. So let me ask you something. Mehecha Bais Lemishra Hamotzi. When you break the loaf for Hamotzi, so where are you supposed to do it? So the halacha is you're supposed to break the bread around the choicest part and eat that first when you make a bracha. So what part is that? So Rashi says, lo yadana, I don't know. It's a good question. The Masha says, Amar le mechafa debayis the mishra motzi lo yimirat, that you haven't learned the law about where you, simple law about where you're supposed to break the bread for Amotzi, the Chavra Karislan, and you call us your colleagues, meaning you're referring to us in this demeaning manner. And I ask you a simple question, a relatively simple question. You don't know the answer, and you're making fun of us. So Rav Ashi says, Agmari Le, teach this to me. Lomachar Darishna Le Mishmach Bifirka. And if you teach this to me tomorrow in the yeshiva, I'll go and teach this in your name. So Amar Le Menashe said to Rav Ashi, Mehacha the Kari Mishula, from the part where that is baked into the crust. So Amar Le, Rav Ashi said to Menashe, Ma'athar Shechakimsu Kule Hai, because you're so learned, my time a cup Balchisu Ala Bodhisvachavim. Why did you worship idols? You're clearly a great Torah scholar. Rav Ashi was the sage who was responsible for redaction of the Talmud. You know, he wasn't a nobody by any means. And Rashi says, Menashe, look how much Torah you learned. You know more Torah than I do. So how'd you go and fall for idolatry? So Amar Lei, Menashe said, I havas hasem, had you been there, hava nakitna bishipule glima, Ra'atas Abasroi, you would have lifted up the bottom of your garment and run after me. Right? Had you been there and you had realized the temptation of idolatry. Mara says that eventually the sages removed the temptation of idolatry because we couldn't deal with it, and it also removed prophecy. But at that time, we can't understand it, but the draw of idolatry was so powerful that even someone who was so learned was still susceptible to it. And had you been there, Rav Ashi, had you been in my situation, living in my time, you would have been running after me to go worship idols. So don't do what this Mishnah is telling us not to do. Don't judge me until you are in my shoes. And the Gemara says, L'machar amar lehu l'rabbanan. And the next day, Rav Ashi said to the other rabbis, Niftach Rav Asa, we will commence today's lectures with our teachers. He didn't call them our friends, but he called them our teachers, meaning of, with the three kings, who the Mishnah says don't have a portion of the world to come because they were so evil. But Rav Ashi realized that they encounter temptations which, you know, we can't even imagine. Again, doesn't excuse the behavior, but put some perspective as far as the challenges that other people have, and teaches us to refrain from judging the person until we fully understand what types of challenges they've experienced. Next part, Val Tomar Davar She'ef Sharli Shmo, don't say something that's not readily understood. So there are a couple explanations of this. One is that don't say something that's vague, that's terse. When you have a message to say, you want to convey something, so say it in a way that's understood. Don't leave it up to interpretation, because you may be misunderstood. Don't say it with the expectation that, oh, people will eventually understand what I'm saying. If you want to say something, so communicate it in a clear way. And it's also connected to the idea of community. You want to affect change in a community, you want to influence a community, so you have to communicate in a way that's direct, in a way that they'll understand. And this could also be understood as telling us not to break confidentiality. So it says, if you have a secret, don't even tell it to someone who is your best friend. And don't say it's impossible that things be heard, as there's no stranger among us to go and, you know, it's just between us. But Rabbi Yonah is telling us what Hillel is teaching us is that in the end, everything is heard, right? Even between you and yourself. You'll talk to themselves. Don't run it over in your mind, because you teach that even don't talk to the walls, because even the walls have ears, right? Get into the habit of not breaking confidentiality. So that's their aspect of this. And finally, don't say that when I free myself of my concerns, when I have free time, then I'll learn. Because Mishnah says, maybe you won't have free time. And this really sums up one of the themes, is that we don't know, we can't be sure of the future. The Rabbeinu Yonah says, in source number 17, we don't know what a new day will bring, what will happen tomorrow. Since tomorrow, there'll be new things you have to worry about. Why do you think, I can't do this today, I'm not going to make time today, tomorrow I'll have more free time, there'll be something else that'll take up your time. And throughout a person's life, it's telling us that there will always be new things that come up, things that could potentially take someone away from learning. So a person has to get into the habit of fixing times for learning. Say Tarasla Kava, as we learned in another mission, the first chapter, make your Torah study fixed. Because if you don't do it, then you're going to likely neglect to learn at all. And this is also connected to being connected to a community. And also the idea of doing something on one's own. You say, why do I need to learn with someone else? There's a great value in learning with a chavrusa. Both you clarify the learning more, but also this is accountability. You and a chavrusa are scheduled for a certain time, so you show up at that time. You're just on your own, so you know it's harder to fix times in the same way. There are shiurim in the community. So I'm telling you, don't be so sure that you on your own could just, you know, learn what could keep up with learning. Attend shiurim, be part of the community's learning, because you don't know if you're on your own and you don't have the help of the community, you can't be sure what might happen. And his question was, what if you don't like the community? So you just stay and try to change them. So that's an excellent question. At what point do you strike that balance? Because you don't want to, the Mishnah says, stay away from a bad neighbor. in the sixth chapter, it tells the story about Yossi ben Kisma. They didn't want to go to a place that they'd only go to a place where that centered around Torah, that's Torah scholars. So there seems to be a balance that a bad neighbor could be someone who's really, if you see that they're really influencing you negatively, so you should stay away from them. And then sometimes, fortunately, there are sometimes people like that or situations like that. And sometimes you're not able to even influence them. And if you get involved, you'll likely be taken down as opposed to bringing them up. But I think this is what this Mishnah is telling us, that is that as a general rule, we should try to, even if we don't have the perfect community, again, Sibur, Tzadikim, Beinanim, and Rishayim, righteous people, average people, and wicked people. There are different types of people in the community, and barring situations where someone is a particularly harmful or negative influence, so we should try to be involved in the community, even if it's not the quote-unquote perfect community. No community is the perfect community, but we have to try as much as we can to work with the community, to be involved with the community, and do our best to positively impact the community. And I think this is very important in our times, is the community, at least the communities in the way that we were used to it, isn't able to interact in the same way. But that's why we need to, and it's especially important to facilitate community in other ways, as we're doing now. You're not even, unfortunately, not able to meet in person, but we maintain that sense of community. And it's so important for, one, our overall benefit, and the fact that we're part of the Jewish people, we have to identify with and be a part of the community. And community really protects us from the unpredictability that we find in the other statements. Right? All the other statements tell us, don't be so sure of this because you never know what could happen. But I think if you're anchored in a community, so that gives you the strength to weather the storms of unpredictable situation and different situations and different challenges that may come up. And that's why it's so important to be part of the community, always be on guard, and always have the humility to realize, as we were fortunately taught in the past year, to recognize what we don't know and strengthen ourselves as much as possible to and positively impact others, to continue to grow ourselves. And hopefully through that, we can, you know, together become strong and become more accomplished in our service of God.
Rabbi.